All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Tuesday, March 31st, 2026. And this is a collective bargaining session between the team from the United Faculty of Florida at the University of Central Florida and the team representing the UCF Board of Trustees. And why don't we go ahead, Charlie, and put up the minutes from March 23rd, last Monday.
Do we not want to mention that we had to break abruptly? Because that's basically what happened, right?
Yes, I think we could include that for posterity.
Yeah, I think we could include that because that's if we had the time, you know.
Charlie, can we put that last? Let's call it a fire alarm. It wasn't a drill.
It was unexpected. Fire alarm in Millikan Hall, right?
It was down in the registrar's office.
Oh.
But yes, it meant all of Millikan Hall had to be evacuated.
But I think Charlie was right to have that as item three and then exchange item three and four.
Okay. I can live with that.
That would be better because I think otherwise we would have just, we would have come to some conclusion. Right. Okay. Okay. That sounds fine. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Charlie.
Yeah, so I think, we can put in the record that basically we're meeting because there was confusion as to what was agreed upon.
Okay, so why don't we pick it up?
Okay.
From where,
sure, from where we left it. Yeah, exactly.
And I think we need to hear from you.
Right, so let me do this. So basically then, well, we were going on the assumption and I think the correct assumption from your side that we all wanted to come to a resolution. That meeting also was a special meeting, right? And we really appreciate your agreeing to that because we were wondering about the time it would take to get ratification because both on your side and our side, there was that... the issue was that we wanted to get money into people's pockets, right? And so we were trying very hard to come to a conclusion, and so essentially what UFF side felt that if we accepted your Article 27. Article 23 for 25, 27, right? Because that's what, remember, we had a long pause, we had a caucus, and at the end, because we were initially hoping that we would get some one-time money, right? And then you said there was no more one-time money. So we said, okay, we'll accept the 1,500, 1,000 package for now, and the provision that you have in your proposal for Article 23 for 25, 27. And in lieu of that, what we were hoping is that you would accept status quo on Articles 10 and 12. So that was somehow we felt that was something that you would accept. And the reason was that we will be bargaining soon and we'll be opening up all articles. So that was our hope, that this way we will be able to get the ratification. But of course, then we heard from you unofficially, right? Because this thing ended, and then you said that no, you were not accepting status quo on Articles 10 and 12. So I think in view of that, let's say the scenario that we have today is that supposing we are able to convince you to accept status quo on Articles 10 and 12, then I think we will, we are accepting your Article 23 for 25, 27. And that, in my view, would be a good scenario, because then we would go to do the ratification. And there would be some comfort for everyone, because they will have something in their paycheck on May 14th. And they would know
15th,
that
15th. Let's not make a promise I can't keep.
May 15th, and then they would have reasons to believe that at least on August 14th. I hope that's the right day. Yeah,
September 14th. August 14th, it goes into effect. It gets paid on September 4th.
Gets paid on September 4th, that there will at least be at minimum a 3% raise in their salaries. Okay, so, and the reason for saying that is that, you know, Articles 10 and 12 is not new. It's been there for, you know, the items in there have been there for a good number of years. And we see no reason why we need to change those. And particularly because, if you remember, we went through a lot of back and forth on AESPs. There was a lot of commotion. There was, the whole university, all departments went through and revamped their AESPs, sticking to the 4 or 5 criteria and got them approved and so on. So given all of that, we just did not see any need for changing 10 and 12 from the status quo. So that is the rationale why we were expecting that you would accept that. And if you accept that, then I don't think we have to say much. If you don't accept that, then I'll give you some more points on why you should accept it.
Well, maybe what we'll do. Well, at this point, we're not going to accept that.
I was not an orator in college, but, you know.
what I'd like to do, I've got to thank you for sharing all that, and really appreciate you clarifying exactly where we were last week when we were so rudely interrupted by that fire alarm. I want to make sure that I indicate something that I put in a document I shared with you over the weekend. We are at a point right now where, even if we agreed today on whatever we agree on, I cannot guarantee this afternoon that I can be on the Board of Trustees agenda on April 15th. And I want to make that clear. I've said that to you before. Last week was a time we were counting on, and yes, things got messed up, and we're here today to try to see what we can accomplish. So hopefully we can come to some resolution. There is, I'm just going to say it like it is. There's one item in Article 10 that the provost wants, and there's an item in Article 12 that the provost wants. And we got to get him. And I have been in touch with him yesterday. He's got a tough schedule today. I don't know that I'm going to be able to reach him if I have to call him. I will try. He knows I will try to call him. I don't know that he'll be able to answer the phone. So I guess for right now, you're stuck with me.
Okay.
And what I want to do is share with you the one thing in Article 12 and the one thing in Article 10 that is very important to us, and explain. There are other things that were proposed in Article 12 besides the one thing that I'm going to mention. But this one's important. If we didn't get the others, I'm okay with that. And the provost would be okay with that. So on Article 12 in particular, I think one time you actually showed us in Article 12 and had indicated that there were some minor changes that we were proposing, like in line 5, to clarify why there's a reference to Article 8 and a reference to Article 15.
No problem.
My impression was that you were fine with that.
No problem.
And there was a clarification we had in line 45 that I think also was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if those two things are okay, there are a couple things, one in Article 12, one in Article 10, that I know are very important to the provost. And I want to remind everybody that the provost, and I used this wording last week, the university is sticking its neck out because we don't have this money yet. If we come to agreement on 25-27, it will happen very early in the fall. But this isn't money that we have in our pockets right now. The budget process at the state level's been delayed. There's going to be some kind of a special session. I haven't checked recently to see whether that's actually been scheduled, but it'll be sometime next month, in the month of April. But the provost feels strongly about trying to provide an increase for the faculty and wants to do that. But it's also important to him that there's, you know, one thing in Article 10 and one thing in Article 12 that we get. So in Article 12, the thing that is very important to the university is getting a second date by which non-reappointment notices can be issued. Right now, all the non-reappointment notices have to be out by September 30th. And when they're issued by September 30th, the person that gets those ends up knowing that they are employed for 219 more days until either May 7th in a non-leap year or May 6th in a leap year. They have 219 days that they are still employed. There are other times besides September 30th when the decision about a non-reappointment may be made. And in the interest of not only the institution, but letting the employee know what's going on, we have proposed May 7th as a second, what we call bright line. So if somebody were issued a notice of non-reappointment by May 7th, they would be employed, by my count, roughly 228 more days until the end of the fall semester. That date usually falls somewhere in the December 21st to 23rd timeframe. It can vary from year to year, but it's generally in that neighborhood. And if it's the 21st of December, it would mean the person would have notice for 228 days before the employment ended. And we think that would give us, two opportunities, if they're needed, to issue non-reappointment notices. And the number of days notice that people would receive is approximately equal. And in fact, it's a little bit longer for the ones that are issued on May 7th rather than September 30th. So we think that, that's something that is important to the university, and would really like to have that second day of May 7th. And, this is something that the provost hasn't stated, but it's something that's occurred to me, and I'll mention it. One of the things I think has been helpful about this round of bargaining, that Talat, your side has encouraged us to be thinking all the time about how resources are utilized at the university. And, I think that's a good point. We need to do that. We need to be good stewards of the resources from the state that are entrusted to us as an institution. And when we have these really long notice periods, what we end up doing is continuing to spend on a person who's not part of the university's long-term plan. We still think somebody ought to have an opportunity to find other employment. And when we get more than 200 days to do so, we think that's reasonable. But when we start looking at a year, or sometimes maybe even longer than a year, depending upon when the notice is issued, you know, I think you've been asking us, and I want to say that we all need to do this, you've been asking us to change our mindset on some of these things, to be really good stewards about dealing with the resources that we have. And we think this is one of those examples. Now, this doesn't make the difference between another percentage raise or anything like that. But it's, I think what you're challenging us to do is to think carefully about how we're utilizing these resources. And I suggest to you that this is an example of that. We want to give people an opportunity to land on their feet, to find suitable employment. And we think that, you know, at least 219 days it should be a pretty reasonable time in order to find that. And as a consequence, May 7th is very attractive to us as a second bright line. What would happen now, probably, if somebody...
Chuck, let me ask you, interrupt one thing. From what I remember a long time ago, it was always May 7th.
Yeah, that was an unqualified disaster. Because that was the only one.
That was the only one. So then,
for example, if somebody got their notice on May 8th, they got two more years.
I see. Actually, if I can interject, there used to be a two-semester leave, and then it was changed to a bright line on the 7th.
Okay. So right now, what would be the difference? Say somebody got on May 7th, then they have until
the fall.
They had the fall, but they don't have the spring.
Correct.
Okay, and if they get it on September 30th, which is the thing now, then they have fall and spring.
They have the rest of fall. They're already more than a month into fall. They have the entirety of spring. Somebody that would get a notice on May 7th may have a summer agreement as well, and may be covered throughout the summer.
Okay,
this is important to the university. There are other things in Article 12 that I'll mention.
How many people do you think are affected by this?
I want to say roughly, Charlie, help me out. I'm going to say 10 to 12 people a year probably get a non-reappointment notice. Okay. Somewhere around there. It's close. Maybe it's been as high as 15. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So it's not a huge number of people. But what happens now if a chair or a dean decides that, you know, at the end of spring, that somebody's going to be non-reappointed, rather than telling them and letting them begin to make plans for the rest of their lives, they wait till September 30th to issue the notice of non-reappointment. So the person doesn't get the benefit of knowing what's going to, and I don't mean that that's what always happens, but I said that could happen, that somebody would not notify an employee as soon as they possibly could. And if that were me, if I was being non-reappointed, I'd want to know about it so that I could begin to make plans for myself and my family.
So Chuck, what happens? I mean, just to have the two similar. So supposing you got, because summer is not nobody is guaranteed appointment.
Not guaranteed. You're right. That's
right.
Good.
So there's no guarantee. And particularly if you're going to non-reappoint someone, you may not even give them a summer appointment. And we're talking about generally about non-tenure earning faculty here, right?
No, this could be
not necessarily. Hiring. Not necessarily. Okay. So if they got a non-reappointment in May, on May 7th, but they still had appointment that basically said that they will be terminated on May 7th the following year, then they get fall and spring.
If it was on, well, what we're saying is they get the notice on May 7th, December 21st to 23rd is going to be their last day. They're not going to go all the way to May 7th.
I think what we're talking about tonight is more people who we would notify after the September date. So say, let's say it's October 1st, then they would get spring and fall. May 7th is just the boundary line.
I see.
Typically you already have your, like everyone here who has a summer agreement probably already knows it because the summer agreements are out and in people's pockets and it's not even April. You know, it's been a while. So someone, if they waited until May 7th, that would be the case. But it's for those people that are unfairly given this huge extension because they're being told at November 1st. And it discourages people from telling someone as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I get the gist of what, so what you're basically saying is that there shouldn't be a cutoff date of September 30th. But people could be informed about non-reappointment anytime up to May 7th.
Now, what we're saying is there would be two dates, one May 7th, one September 30th. September 30th already exists. And people who are notified prior to those dates would get a certain guarantee about continued employment. For the people that get the notice on May 7th, they would be carried till late December, December 21st, let's say. And the people that are notified by September 30th would get till May 7th.
It might be easier to think of it as someone in January gets notified, they will have all that spring and the following fall. That's how it works with the September deadline. So they receive notice around August, and they get the rest of that fall and the following spring. So the idea is to try to give as much of that two semesters as you can, because right now it's unbalanced and unfair to someone who gets notice in October rather than someone who gets notice in September. Putting two dates helps even it out.
Okay. And this somehow helps in terms of financially or what? What would be the gain?
It could a little bit. I mean, the numbers aren't big. Admittedly, the numbers aren't big.
Yeah.
But I think part of this is really an ethical question. When a decision's been made that someone's going to be non-reappointed, I think they should be told. And it's harder to do that when there's only one date. If we decide in June that somebody's going to, or April, Charlie had the example January, that somebody's going to be non-reappointed, it's 9 months before that matters. They're going to get all that time up to September 30th, and then the next academic year. They're going to get a year and a half that way, which is an awful lot of time, particularly when it's somebody that, for whatever reason, the university has decided to separate from this, mm-hmm. this person. Not saying that they've done anything wrong, just the decision's been made. So we're just trying to get
a little more
flexibility.
Right. And it is affecting, as you said, not a large number of people.
No, it is not.
Right. Okay.
So thank you for hearing us out.
We got your perspective. We can discuss it and get back to you.
Okay.
I know we won't take a whole lot of time, but we can talk about it. But yeah, okay. So that's the main one.
That's the main one in 12. I just want to mention a couple other things in 12 that are not issues that I'm willing to lay on the tracks for. The May 7th is one I'm willing to lay on the tracks. We had suggested some changes in lines 22 through 24 as well. Right now, it says that if a CNG or auxiliary person is given a notice of non-reappointment, they should get 60 days notice if they've got, and if they've got 5 or more years, they get 90 days notice. And we are suggesting that it just be changed to at least 30 rather than 60 or 90. The truth is, when you look at particularly CNG things, when somebody's out of money, it's going to be rare that somebody gets the 60 or 90 days anyway, because if not money available. So we're okay to leave it, but we need to look at, you know, what the reality is. When folks run out of CNG money, there may not be enough money to carry them for 60 or 90 days. If we got it, great, but it doesn't always work out that way. So we were just trying to say that, you know, we're going to try to provide at least 30 days. If that's not palatable, if we want to leave it the way it is, okay. This is not one that, you know, I'm willing to hammer a stake in the ground. But that was the rationale for that one. Then in lines 27 through 31, I just want to mention something there. I do think what we had proposed here to separate 9-month and 12-month employees makes sense regardless of how many years of continuous university service we're looking at. So I still think that's a good idea. The question then becomes whether saying that we want to look at the first 3 years of continuous university service, which is what we have now, or 4 years of continuous university service. And this affects line 32 as well, I see. Mm-hmm. The thinking on this one was that if we've got, and I was thinking of a tenure track faculty primarily, but there could be other employees as well. But I was imagining that there might be a newly hired assistant professor who starts in the fall. They have no service credit toward tenure, which is common. Very few faculty come with advanced credit toward tenure. They don't get their first CPE until their second spring. And they get their second CPE in the third spring. The way this is written now, it makes a big difference whether a person is non-reappointed after a second CPE, which may say below expectations. So, you know, somebody's got some issues with the CPE. They're not doing so great, at least not yet. The way this is written now, there's a bit of an incentive to non-reappoint them at the end of the third year rather than allowing them to continue, because if they continue, then we got this September 30th deadline that we've got to deal with. So we were thinking that making this 4 years and giving somebody usually an opportunity to have three CPEs before a big decision about non-reappointment became more critical, and there came to be maybe a little bit of an incentive for the university to go ahead and non-reappoint somebody. If we don't have that incentive in place because it says 4 years instead of three, we thought that might help some faculty who have a chance to rebound from a poor CPE. But truthfully, if we get May 7th, this isn't as big a deal because things are more balanced, as Charlie was saying. With the two dates of May 7th and September 30th, the thinking that we had on the 3 years or the 4 years versus three kind of goes away, or it's not as critical. But that May 7th is important to us. And regardless, even if we stay with 3 years in line 27 and 3 years in line 29 and 3 years in line 32, I still hope we separate the 9 month and the 12 month employees as was proposed here.
Okay.
But that was the rationale. But, you know, May 7th
we got the point. Yeah. We got the point. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Well, I guess in Article 10, then, what I'd like to bring to your attention is we had talked about updating the ratings on the annual performance evaluations from the current 5 that we have to 4 that match the ratings that have been established by the Florida Board of Governors in Regulation 10.003 for post-tenure review. So this is ultimately the rating system that the tenured faculty for sure are going to have to be aware of and be cognizant of and be responding to. And as we've been talking about it around here, we think it makes sense to have the same rating scale on the annual evaluations that we have for post-tenure review. And I'll even argue it's pretty doggone close to what we have on the CPE. So if we look at, you know, what the Florida Board of Governors did in their regulation, they've got the exceeds expectations, meets expectations, does not meet expectations, and unsatisfactory. And that's the rating system that we are proposing to use on the annual evaluations for our faculty. As we look at this, one of the things that we want to make sure that we do, we want to fairly evaluate faculty each year, and the AESPs that the faculty work very hard on will help us do that. I think we made some real improvements in the AESPs last year, but we also think it's important that we provide meaningful evaluations that are congruous with the post-tenure review. And I know when we were talking last time about Article 10, you know, a concern that comes up, and it's not just a concern that's expressed by the faculty, but it's been expressed by two provosts as well, is we get these annual evaluations that say somebody's absolutely outstanding year after year, and then when they're evaluated for post-tenure review, the conclusion isn't the same. And it's kind of confusing, and it's understandable. If somebody says you are absolutely wonderful, can't think of anything that you could do better, but then when we look at things over a 5-year period and really are comparing people, as it says in the Board of Governors regulations, you know, across the faculty members' discipline and units, so it's not just in the department, but how are people in this field doing elsewhere? And it says a clear and significant level of accomplishment beyond the average performance. So we think that going to this scale means that every year people are going to get fair and meaningful annual evaluations. They may be not exactly the same that they had before. We think that doing this, it sets people up for greater success during post-tenure review. If I know what the scale is that's going to be used for post-tenure review, and I've been responding to that all along, I ought to be in a better position to succeed. The bad scenario that, you know, we want to avoid, and this is one that I know we've talked about before, where, and I alluded to it a moment ago, an employee gets these great evaluations year after year and thinks everything is just wonderful, and then the post-tenure review, they find out, well, they weren't as great on the post-tenure review as they were with the annual evaluations. And we'd like to get these better aligned so the outcomes from the annual evaluations, the outcomes from post-tenure review, the outcomes from the cumulative progress evaluations are more in sync and better aligned. So we're hoping that this is going to lead to some consistency. I think there are some other things in Article 10 that we had suggested that are really just minor editorial things. I didn't look carefully at those today, and I apologize for not doing that. But the big thing in Article 10 is the evaluation scale, and that's very important.
So, Chuck, I you know, you have got my blood pressure up a little bit, okay? So,
sorry about that.
Okay, so one of the thing is that, you know, actually, tomorrow if I show up, I will be getting something saying I've been here 20 years. Hard to believe because I thought I just came. But okay, so one of the thing is that you know, I was hoping that by this time UCF has grown up, right? When I came, it was still a pretty you know, young university, and then there are lots of things being done. But basically, what you're saying is that we really don't have values and standards ourselves. Like people at University of Florida do, or Florida State University do, and so on. We're basically going to be dictated by the legislature, and we are going to basically hone in on post-tenure review and make that the way we are going to be evaluating everybody in the system here. So first of all, it would be amazing if we converted everybody into tenure earning or tenure positions, okay? In other words, then post-tenure review makes sense. But as we have it, we don't have most of the people in bargaining unit. I mean, not most, but I mean, probably hopefully most are tenure earning. But a large number, and I think you can tell me more than what I know, is that a large number of people are not going to come up for post-tenure review. So that's one thing. And then there is this question of why this inconsistency between how you're being evaluated annually and then what comes at post-tenure review. And I can give you my answer to that. Your annual evaluations are being done by your chair in our place, right? By your unit director or chair. And it is done on the basis of criteria that has been set up in the evaluation AASPs, right, where we take a lot of care to see that we are being evaluated in our own units, just like our peers are being evaluated in other universities. And so, you know, because most of us think of not just belonging to the unit here, but belonging to our profession as such, right? So you look at how people are evaluated. And so then the AASPs that we have, which is really the way people should be evaluated, if anything, you want to make the post-tenure review process to be reflecting exactly that. And when you say something about CPEs, that's not a problem, because what you're doing in your annual evaluation, and again, I have to turn on also my chair hat. I was chair for 10 years here, almost 10 years. So I have to say a little bit about how you motivate people into doing things. And as you know, in the 10 years that I was chair, the physics department made tremendous progress, right? And the way it happened, I mean, it's all documented, so I don't have to talk about it. But the way it happened is to make sure that everybody felt that they belonged, and then that even people who may have been disengaged did not want to be disengaged. So how do you do that? You do that by providing incentives, by providing, in the evaluations, and this is why a 5 scale is better than 4, because, you know, you've got the outstanding, you've got above satisfactory, there are lots of people who fall in the above satisfactory, and then there are people who are then in the others. And again, I can't speak for other departments, I can only speak for what happens in physics. And so I think the problem that we have is that we have this AASPs, which we went through very carefully, and it gives us these criteria. If this is not reflecting the actual performance of faculty in that unit, then that's where we have to work on it, right? That's where you have to provide incentives, and that's where you have to say that this is what's going on. To me, to put, you know, and again, I'm thinking more in terms of excellence. I'm thinking more about how do you make it so almost all of you, all of the faculty in the department belong in the top category. And that is then to not have the outstanding and the above satisfactory, those two is problematic because then you can do one of two things. You can either just have a very few who are going to be above expectation, and then most people would be meet expectation. And so, you know, I would have difficulty with that. It is as somebody who's evaluating, I would rather have this area where if I couldn't evaluate, put somebody as outstanding, I could at least put them as above satisfactory. Because one of the things that, again, I have to go back to is that if you're looking at faculty at UCF, we have already been declared the most efficient university, right? We have already been declared, we already know that we have the largest student to faculty ratio in the country, not just in the University of Florida. I've also given you all the numbers to show that we are the least rewarded faculty in the Florida State University system. I can give you, over the last 5 years, we have gotten less raise than any other of the 12 universities in the state university system, with no raise for 2025-26, which is now settled. It will be 3 years in the last, since 2020, since COVID, that we would have had no raise. Okay, so you're talking about faculty who, despite all of this, have still managed to put UCF to the point where they're probably going to be, hopefully, going to be made preeminent. Okay, so, you know, when we compare ourselves to our peers, we have gone beyond what has been called on others without the rewards. Okay, so no rewards, and yet we're going to come and tighten you even more and not even give you the pleasure of having evaluations where, you know, there's a little bit of room so that, you know, you're not going to be, you know, yeah, yes, if you say we are going to err, so that we're going to put most people in the below above expectation, well, we can talk about that. But the point is that what you were sending to us did not reflect that. And so why be punitive? If you want people to be contributing, if you want them to be, you know, their morale is low. You have agreed. Everyone has agreed. You know, the surveys after surveys showing where faculty are disengaged. And they are telling us. I mean, we've got the several surveys. So I think the problem that we are having here is basically this idea that we are disposable commodities. We are people who should be treated with punitive measures. And basically, you know, I mean, there'll be some of us who will always, you know, will be okay. But then the rest of us will always be wondering, well, am I below expectation? Am I above expectation? Am I at expectation? At expectation is not really where we want to be, you know. I think most of us want to be beyond expectation. So I think we are putting ourselves in a place where we really are not even allowing faculty who are overworked, who are underpaid compared to their peers. And again, I'm not going to, when I say underpaid, I mean in terms of raises. I don't know about exact numbers. So the point is that the rewards that people are expecting are not there. And then you bring in another measure so late that, no, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give you 3% if you agree on this. It doesn't fit well. I mean, this is not how you're going to make people, you know, be connected and get the kind of morale that you want, which in the end is what you want because of, you know, if nothing else, for the benefit of our students. So I don't know. I can talk to my colleagues who are here and find out what they think about it. But to me, when you say that you're not willing to even you know, go through the, why didn't you think about it last year? I mean, why make us go through all the ASPs with all those five criteria? And we had, you know, one after the other, I had town hall because everybody was being told, no, you have to do it in these five categories. Post-tenure review has been there, you know, so why do we have to do it so late in the year? We can start the negotiations in November, and you know, we can take it from there, and we can hear it from your side, we can hear it from our side, we can have some town halls. And what I would say is that, you know, we can look at both the what you want in Article 12 and what you want in Article 10. I would say that, again, I'll listen to my colleagues who are here and what they want to tell me to do. But my, you know, recommendation would be that we look at Article 12, but in Article 10, I would say that let's wait till November. That would be, and again, you know, I'm one person and somebody who gets excited about these things, but you know, that's where I am, because I firmly, you know, I Chuck, you know me, and you know what I do with faculty, junior faculty, with everybody around me. My whole thing in my whole life has been, if I can motivate people and make them better and provide a better environment, then that fulfills everything for me. So to me, you know, I want to do so that my colleagues don't feel that they're all the time being whipped. I want them to feel that they have the room where they can grow, where they can really, and if you give them that, they will give it back to you. So that's what I will say. But I'm going to stop here, and I can, we can take a short break.
I just want to say a couple of things, and thank you for sharing your thoughts on that, Talana. I understand your point of view, and I appreciate you sharing it. I don't know, it doesn't strike me that evaluating people at four levels instead of five necessarily changes motivation. I know you feel differently about that. There's no intention that this would be punitive. The idea was it was meant to try to help and just make things clearer for faculty. You may disagree, and that's okay, and you and your team get to talk about that and tell us what you think.
Chuck, I got angry emails when this word got out. I got angry emails and emails from, you know, particularly from STEM areas, where they were very upset that this is what we're trying to do.
Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing that as well. It sounds like we're thinking about a caucus.
Let's do that.
So let me, I just want to make sure that I'm
no fire alarm.
I want to make sure that we're super clear on this. To close on 25-27, we can't just say Article 12 might be okay and Article 10 is not. We're going to have to come to do 25-27. Yeah. We got to do them all. Mm-hmm. And so I mentioned that. And then hopefully we can come together pretty soon. And, you know, I hope we can do the 25-27. You know, maybe that can't happen today. We can do the 25-26 and get the one-time payment and then continue the negotiations. But if we can get to a point where we do 10 and 12, that would be great. But that's our position. You know, there may be some other things in 10 that are just housekeeping things that, you know, I didn't go over. We would hope that we would get those as well. I really understood that this was the big issue that was likely to lead to some discussion, and it has, and that's good that we had a chance to talk about it. And I hope your blood pressure is coming down as you get ready to go into caucus.
I already released it.
Okay. All right. I'm glad to hear that. So
So
are we agreeing now that we're going to caucus? Do you have any sense for how long you might want
to? I think, we don't want any fire alarms. It's 1:22. Why don't we do 20 minutes?
How about we say 1:45? Let's come back.
1:45 is good. 1:45 is good.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so just come
Charlie,
back.
You can stop the recording for now, I think. Thank you.
Yeah. Just come back at 1:45. On first Article 12, in Article 12, We would be willing to go with the second date if the proviso is introduced that if somebody is given a non-reappointment on May 7th, they still will be employed in the fall and the spring. So they're, in other words, they will get two semesters.
So what so I think
that's worse than what we have now.
So
from our perspective,
Chuck, though, is maybe the date of May 7th is too late in the spring semester to get them comfort. So what if we moved it to March 30th? So that, just the same as September 30th, gives you a little time into the fall semester. Another date that's not May 7th, but maybe, you know, February 28th, because there's always one of those, right? February 28th was the last day. Then they'd get the rest of the spring semester and the fall semester. Is that more like what you're looking for, Talat?
So basically what we're looking for is the ability for somebody to be in the job market. Right? Because you know, the jobs are usually, typically jobs are in August, right? People start jobs in August, and the ads for jobs come in December or something like that. So yeah, I think if we made it, I would say something like January 15th or something like end of January, something so that they could be in the market for jobs. I think that's what we're looking at.
Well, so, right now it's August 7th until September 30th. So to give about the same amount of distance, Chuck, what would that be? February 28th, or would it be a little
February
later?
28th would be close. That'd be close.
But you could also make it a little earlier, right? You could also make it February 15th.
Yes, we can. We could make it February 15th or Valentine's Day.
I think as long, I mean, again, I have not talked to everyone here, but I think as long as the main concern was that you need to get a job, and you, if you get the thing in May, you're too late because offers have already been given.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this. If we used February 15th, and then someone got the rest of spring and the fall, so they were done December 21st or whatever it turns out.
Yeah, and you know, these are people who may even leave earlier because they have another job.
Yes, that does happen.
I mean, the main thing is that you don't want people to be unemployed, you know, and so they have to be in the cycle for you know, and so the earlier in February we can do, the better we are.
So if that is a change that is made, so I just saved a new document. Sorry.
Yeah.
Pull it up.
So if that, but that would be, so we're doing a package, you know, so if we would agree to that, if you agree to go status quo on 10. And if you go on status quo on 10, then we would settle everything and we would then be doing Article 23, 25, 27.
Oh.
So that's the package.
Well, I don't know that we can do this. I want to understand what's being proposed on 12. Is the only thing in 12 that we're talking about right now is a second date?
The second date, yeah.
Possibly February 15th mm-hmm. instead of May 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Person that was notified by February 15th
mm-hmm.
would get through the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next calendar year, they're doing something else.
Yeah, that's right. And then, we want to. So that's the package. We get.
Okay, well, I get it. I want to make sure that I understand 12. There was another thing that we talked about in 12 where
Which
we had separated. The 6 and the 9 months.
That's not a problem.
The 9 and the 12. So
that's not a problem.
And what about the 3 versus 4 years?
No, we'll keep the way things are.
Okay. 3 years, and we'll separate 9 and 12 months in
right.
there. Okay. All right. What I'd like to do is take a very short personal caucus About 12. Oh, well, I know 10 is still going to be a problem.
You know, Chuck, if 10 is, so this is maybe that's what's important. Okay. Why don't you, if you already have the answer, then I don't think you have to go to the provost. Because 10 is one in which people are really, because I think the message that is being given with 10 is that we are basically want to convert everyone to the point where they are just meets expectation. And then it's a way to get rid of a lot of people and essentially to do away with tenure. And that is where nobody from outside, no legislature, or any or governor's office or anyone is asking. UCF is basically going on its own to basically not have tenure on this campus. And this was a strong message that I got. And you know, I was telling you that I got emails. I actually was not even aware of exactly all the implications, but my colleagues have been thinking about it. And they say that, you know, the AASPs, we had spent so much time developing them. We had this whole framework where you are supposed to see it work and see whether it leads to something or not. So all the changes were done. It went back and forth. A lot of energy was spent, and we are not even giving a few years' time to the AASPs to show whether they bring in the kind of results we want or not. And we are trying to start all over again on something that is basically coming very top down, nothing like the AASPs, which are created by faculty with a lot of involvement and a lot of care. Now we are basically being told from the top that this is how we're going to do it. And then there are definitions from the Board of Trustees about what it is that makes you above expectation. And above expectation is that there, if you look at the Board of Trustees that some of the colleagues have looked, is basically most of us would be in the meets expectation. And there would be maybe some National Academy members who would be in the above expectation. So if that is what UCF wants, then this is a good way to be saying that this is not going to be a tenure, a place where tenure is valued. But, people better be looking. So we have a very clear message that this is something that we cannot accept.
Talat,
okay. We're not ready to do away with tenure. Who's that?
Okay, just a second. I assure you that the last thing that we are trying to do is do away with tenure at UCF. That is not the intention. I hear you that you are not ready to accept what we have proposed in 10. What I'd like to do is try to take another caucus. I think, well, if I could summarize, we have agreement on 3 at status quo.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we've talked about is a different date instead of May 7th, of February 15th. And, that may be doable. I don't know. And I'm hearing 10, no dice on 10.
Exactly.
What about everything else in 10 except for the scale? That's what I wanted to know. Do you want to look at it real quick?
We can look at it quickly. If they're minor things, I don't think there's a problem.
The only other thing that's of significance is on line 116, 161.
I'm getting there. Hold on. My computer's very slow. Okay.
This was saying
that's no that problem.
This okay. is a required CPE. Okay, no problem. Okay.
No problem.
I just want to check and make sure there's nothing else that one time when you're this was a good thing, right? So okay.
All right. I think we know where we are and as far as we can get today. I want to take another caucus if I can and try to figure out whether
Like you were saying, a package, we're also giving you a package.
I get it, Talat. Okay. I think we're having, bargaining sessions like we should have bargaining sessions. So
that's great. Time for coffee.
Chuck, may I stop the recording?
Just a moment. I'd like till 2:10.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm going to have to do to try to track down the provost.
Okay.
I'd like okay. that. So let's reconvene at 2:10.
Okay. Keep in touch through the chat. Okay.
Okay. Fine. Thank you so much.
Okay. Chuck, I just stopped the recording. I'm supposed to wait for him okay. to tell me.
Okay. All right.
Bye.
Yeah. Okay. Because the recording was left on.
I heard.
So,
I heard.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for accommodating me and giving me a chance to caucus. I was able to catch up with Provost Buckwalter, and I've got some things that I can share with you. We will accept the alternate date of February 15th instead of May 7th. And again, if someone is notified between October 1st and February 15th, they would get the rest of that spring and the following fall semester. And if someone is notified between February 16th and September 30th, they would get the remainder of that fall semester and the next spring, right? On the non-reappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then with the exception of separating that paragraph to deal with the 9-month and 12-month people in separate sentences. And the things, there were some things we'd already agreed to. The rest of it, the 3 to 4, we're removing.
I did.
Charlie's already taken care of that. So I think we're good on 12. I know we got a package, but you know, 3 and 12, I think we've got knocked out. Article 10, we seem to have agreed that everything except the change to the evaluation scale was acceptable. And we can do that and not make the change on the scale in Article 10. But the provost wanted me to convey what my team also wanted me to convey is we will be bringing that back at some point so that we can, you know, continue our discussion about that. But for 25-27, the scale would be unchanged. And Charlie has looked at Article 10 and, you know, we accepted everything else except where we propose these changes and she's rejecting them.
Okay. Well, that's good.
And
Matthew, you wanted to say something? Matthew, you have a hand up.
Thank you. Yeah, can you show us line 213 in that Article 10 that you have up?
This is for PTR.
Maybe the line number's not accurate anymore. There was a concern about grievance. Does anyone remember where that was?
I accepted everything else that was in there.
Yeah, but no.
Is this what you're looking for?